Hey everybody, this is Mike Van Meter, and welcome to the Mike Van Meter Show, and this is your one-stop shop for everything having to do with conservatism, patriotism, and really just, I think, the best way to live your life, as far as I'm concerned, because that's what we are trying to do. We're trying to make America the best that it can be for all of us, and unless you've been living under a rock, there is a big election coming up here in November, of which I'm a part of, running for the 11th Congressional District here in Fairfax County, Virginia. And tonight, I want to talk to you about and with a man that is going to be a part of that process in one way or another. And what he is looking for is your support as the chairman for the Fairfax County Republican Committee here in the Northern Virginia. And if you're not involved in politics, I can tell you, if you ever decide to run for office, you have a lot of people around you. You have a lot of organizations around you, a lot of support. And those positions are key, and this is one of those positions. And Brian Murphy, my guest tonight, is one of the folks running for the chairmanship of the Fairfax County Republican Committee, or the FCRC, as we like to call it. And he will be instrumental in helping me get elected to Congress. And we have to get as many conservatives in both the House and the Senate as we can, and of course the presidency. But, you know, in my case, I'm running for Congress. And we do have a number of candidates running for the United States Senate, and we need all the support that we can get. And so Brian is offering himself out there to be a part of that process in the FCRC, and we're going to get to meet him tonight. We met some of the other candidates earlier, but we're going to meet Brian, and the election for this position is on Saturday. So with that, let me bring Brian on the show, and he's going to tell us about himself and what he would like to do with the FCRC. So with that, Brian, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks, Mike. Appreciate your offer.
Well, tell us a bit about yourself. You know, just a bit about your background. And you've run for office yourself. And then also, what motivated you to run for the chairmanship of the FCRC? And what are your plans?
Well, my background is what a good mentor of mine once said, anything but normal. As an early age, I found myself behind the Iron Curtain in Leningrad. And so I got to see a socialist state up close and personal. And it was very impactful. And after the Cold War, or after my time over there, I came back and decided to pursue happiness in this great country of ours, and got into business and worked my way up to chief financial officer and then my own company. And then have done that ever since. And recently it occurred to me that something has gone very wrong. I was a Trump supporter and campaigned hard for him in 2016, and I was very happy when he was elected. Then decided that everything was right again because we put the right man in. He did fantastic things with the country. I went back to my passion, which is real estate and building, developing. When I finished up, you know, getting President Trump elected, of course, we were tremendously successful there because everybody that joined the merry band didn't know that we weren't supposed to do things in a political correct manner. So we just went out and knocked on doors and rallied people and got a president elected. I think we universally fail to realize that a lot of our assumptions, like the peaceful transition of power, were just that, assumptions. And if you look at the last 8 years in America, you'll find that a lot of our assumptions were just that. And the left has decided that they're going to act out and, you know, abandon those assumptions that have kept us going so great and so strong for 250 years. So then I had to get involved. You know, it's like you can work yourself, to death. But if you have somebody taking everything you're making, what's the point? And that's not what America is. America, we have a really great message in the Republican Party, and that is dream big, work hard, build a better future for yourself and your family. That American promise has drawn people to our shores for 250 years. And every time I speak in my last year's campaigns, and whenever I speak to different groups, it's the same message, and it just carries, it just resonates across the spectrum. But unfortunately, where we are now, we found ourselves up against people who say, no, you can work hard as you want, but we're going to put you into so much debt that you'll never be able to work it off. And building a better future for your family and your children, well, we're taking your children and we're going to make them what we want them to be, not what you, your culture, or your religion want them to be. And every day I just saw more and more evidence of that, where things just were really, really going wrong. And, you know, at some point you have to go back to that saying of, if not me, who? If not now, when? So we started going and volunteering with campaigns, and then worked our way up through the chain of command, as it were, from a poll watcher to a election official to a chief election official to a precinct captain, and finally to a candidate. And boy, that candidate business was a real eye-opener. And I learned so much that we're doing wrong that I decided I had to get involved. I had to throw my hat in the ring for the FCRC to end this losing streak that we've been on for the past 20 years, because it's, you know, when I give that message about, you know, the American exceptionalism, the resonating I'm getting back from the various communities that I speak to is inconsistent with our continuing to lose elections. So I put on my corporate workout specialist hat and I took a look at the whole process and I said, well, there it is right there. You know, we're not preparing our candidates properly. We're not giving them enough support. There are several other main platform planks that I've been emailing out all this week to the delegates. And it just boils down to, you know, we still have a great message. We're just not getting it out. We have great candidates, but they spend the first 3 months of the candidacy figuring out how to do it. And finally, at the end of the day, we have a lot of issues with getting out the vote is something that's very worthy. But what I discovered was we're going about that all wrong. We have a finite number of people in Fairfax County. And over the course of a candidacy, if we all work together properly as a team, we should be able to touch every single voter several times. But the way we're going about it in a each man for himself manner, it really just consumes too much of our resources for each individual candidate. And that's what I discovered when I was running, that the costs can be mitigated if you plan properly and you execute properly. And more importantly, if the FCRC were organized properly, then we could, you know, significantly reduce the costs of running out of the gate. And you as a candidate could save an awful lot of money for later on when you're actually going toe-to-toe with the opposition, when you really need the money and when you really need consultants that know what they're doing. So that's what convinced me to run. And I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to get in and make a difference and end this losing streak we've been on.
Yeah, a lot of people talk about this losing streak. And I can tell you, today, as a matter of fact, April 4th, 2024, was the deadline to file to be a candidate, to pay your fee, get the paperwork in, and the signatures. So as of today, I am the candidate, right, for the 11th Congressional District, the Republican candidate. Now, the reason why I bring that up...
That's kind of a dubious congratulations I'm offering there.
You know what?
From one candidate to the other, you know, you've been there before.
Yes, so. I have. It's kind of like you want to say congratulations, but you and I both know what we're getting ourselves into, right?
Yeah.
But the reason why I say that is, notice I said I went unchallenged. And I think the reason why I went unchallenged kind of ties into some of what you were just talking about, and that is that here in Northern Virginia, Republicans have lost for so long, and I want to say like 20 some odd years, about 20 years. And so the reason why I think that I'm unopposed is because people think that it can't be won. And I want to ask you about that, because if I did not think that I could win, I would not be running, right? But I do believe that it's going to really hurt me as a candidate because of the fact that there is this mentality in Northern Virginia that we can't win, so why bother? In the last election, there was money available, and we don't need to relitigate how all this was decided and who was picked and who wasn't picked, but there was a lot of money that went to certain candidates and money didn't go to other candidates, and a large part of the reason was because it was like, why waste time in Northern Virginia?
Right.
So I want to start with, do you believe that, and how are we going to change that? And what is it that we need to do? Because I do not believe ever that we can't win elections. And I do not like this defeatist attitude that we have up here. And also, another reason why I ran is the idea that we would leave any position up against a Democrat vacant and just hand an office to the Democrats without even trying is abhorrent to me. So I just want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, I think, Mike, that there are two distinct parts of that. There is the pre-candidacy and the post-candidacy. And the pre-candidacy comes within our party, where we, you know, it's a matter of, in your military background, you'll recognize the term morale, unit cohesion and morale. And we have neither. And so that's one of the reasons why I decided to go to the FCRC and then run for the chair, because I needed to get a better command over those two major problems that we have. On the post-candidacy, everybody says, oh, it's a blue state, it's a blue neighborhood or a blue district or whatever. Well, you know, I can't accept that. As a, you know, I have a degree in economics, and it's something that, you know, human beings will exercise their own self-interest choice. And when I hear people say, well, they're all government employees and all that, well, you know, I disagree. That doesn't make them automatically lobotomized and stupid people. You know, they will still make a choice. And above all, on the post-candidacy side of the argument, is the one thing that they haven't taken yet. I'm sure they would love to, but it's our secret ballot. The Australian ballot is the cornerstone of American democracy. And the ability to go in and cast your vote and nobody knows that you did it other than that you did vote, is a serious asset or power that we are not availing ourselves of. I believe that if we get our message out, and that is the message of American exceptionalism, the message that all the minorities have come to America to avail themselves of, in that voting booth, in that secret ballot, they will vote for us. We're just not getting the word out. And they're not getting examples. They're not seeing success. And we're also not getting a message through the media. Now, we can't, you know, ignore them. The media is, well, let's say I haven't seen media this biased and propagandized since I was in Leningrad in 1976. No matter where I look, whether it's the feed on the screen of my laptop or whether it's in the newspapers or whatever, everything is slanted, everything is biased, and you know, it's devastatingly difficult to get our message out because the left wants our message to be demonized, silenced, and to only leave room in the eyeballs and in the ears of the constituents up here for their message, for their candidates. And it's unfair, and I think there's no sense in whining about that. You know, we let it happen. And as that old saying, you know, it's too late to complain about who drained the swamp when you're up to your ears in alligators. So we just have to, you know, knuckle down and get on it. And we'll start with the pre-candidacy. So we will train our candidates. We will, I visited with the Loudoun County Republican Committee the other night, and they do a formal gala. And I think last year they raised something like $35,000. A lot of that went straight ecumenically across all of their candidates. They didn't pick and choose. Every candidate got their starter package, their seed money. And what I want to take that a step further. I want to use my corporate skills. And, you know, I used to be a contracting purchasing officer. I want to use that negotiating skill to find vendors who will give us, you know, mass discounts or volume discounts to get all of our printing business, all of our sign business, all of our t-shirts, tchotchkes, whatever, get those at a rock bottom price. And so when a candidate throws his hat in a ring, we can say, okay, here's your starting package. It will cost you $500. We'll give you all your business cards, your starter package of your palm cards and your door hangers and 10 yard signs. Get out and start knocking doors. And we'll figure out the rest later when you need to raise more money. And we'll do this simultaneously rather than have each candidate running around trying to raise money just so they can get these things. They, you know, normally they're stuck with having to buy smaller lots, which costs them a lot of money. As you know, and as I learned the hard way, to have a good quality palm card and a good quality door hanger that gives the right impression is very, very expensive. But if we share the costs and make it universally available to all the candidates, and more importantly, here's another part of it. They will all be the same. They will carry our brand. We're not going to have any of this, you know, do your own thing, man. We're going to have, you will take the brand of the Republican Party. You know, quid pro quo for this deal. You wear our brand. You have our brand and you have our design on your palm card, on your door hangers and whatnot. And every candidate will have the same brand so that we can show force. We can show up as a team and make an impression rather than have one guy who happened to have more money than the other guy show up and then the other guy's kind of like comes in a week later, that sort of thing. So it's got to be a universal effort. We've got to have all hands on deck. We got to boost the morale. And I propose to do that through our version of a formal gala where everybody can dress up for a night, let their hair down, and have the gals put on the best dresses. And then all the donors can come and meet the candidates in an environment when it's not a cold, desperate phone call. Like when they're begging for money or whatnot, and everybody knows what you're on the phone for. So a lot of the pleasantries tend to get a little hollow. But if you're in a formal gala where you're just working the crowd and whatnot, you know, you get to make up your mind about people and they, you know, they can look you over and you can talk to them. And later on, when it's time, you can remind them that you met at the gala. I think that will go a long way to sort of freeing up the money.
Yeah, because I got to tell you, I really like a lot of what you're saying here, because that is something that I discovered in this state Senate race that I ran this last year was the first time I ever ran for office. And I was a bit surprised, to be honest with you, because I was intrigued by the fact that you brought up the military, because I do have a military background. And I had the mistaken notion that when I ran for office, that this was a team effort, meaning that it was going to be Team Republican, Team R. Because after all, I looked at the Democrats and they appear, and I'm sure they have their flaws behind the scenes and they fight. I'm sure that happens. But I can tell you this, one thing I do respect about them is that when they go out in public, they are definitely a front. I mean, you and I would never know about the infighting behind the scenes, but yet there was a lot of that going on with us, and it was not a team effort ever. And I never felt like I was prepared. I never felt like nobody sat me down to explain, you know, how to do fundraising. You know, how do you do this? How do you do that? It just didn't happen. And I felt like there was a lot of fighting in between candidates, oftentimes that was just unnecessary. It was like we spent more time fighting each other than we did the Democrats. And I never understood that. But speaking of the fundraising, you raised some good points too, and that is the galas and the dinners and the meetings. You know, as a candidate, I'm sure you ran into this like I did. You're on your own in doing that as far as who you're going to meet, when you're going to meet them, who are the dinners going to be. You have to figure all of that out on your own. And then you do the door knocking or the calling of the phone lists, the vast majority of whom will never pick up the phone, will never speak to you, because that it just people I have found my experience so far has been, I can call 100 numbers and get no donations. I speak in front of a group in person, and I get donations that night. So to me, the key is to get in front of people and speak to people. And then when they see you and they meet you and they can look into your eyes and they can ask you questions, they're more comfortable with donating. However, it is all incumbent, at least up until now. And I'm just saying this as a candidate, that getting in front of these groups, arranging these dinners and these functions always falls on the candidate. But as a candidate, you look and go, but where's the party? Why isn't the party helping me do this? After all, I'm assuming that people that are involved in the party know who you should be talking to and can arrange that. We put so much burden on the candidate, in other words, and it sounds like that's something that you want to work on.
Well, it is indeed. And what I always told people, especially my campaign manager at the time, that, you know, get me in front of people, you know, just get me in front of them, because I give good word. I give good speeches. In fact, if you go to there's a Brian Murphy for Supervisor YouTube channel, and then my Brian Murphy for Supervisor.com, I had these videos shot of me giving speeches. And in one, which unfortunately I don't have because I didn't have my videographer there with me at the time, because it was impromptu, I gave a speech, and it was to an interfaith community out in Chantilly of Hindus and Muslims. Talk about a hot spot in the world, right? And I gave this speech, and they were all but on their feet cheering and clapping at the end, and they followed me out to my car hugging me, saying, "We've been looking for that in America since we came here." And, I mean, one guy was in tears. He was a doctor, and he said, "My wife and I came here for that reason, for what you just said." And, I mean, it moved me deeply. And so I think what we need to do is we also need to build our resources. We don't have institutional knowledge in the FCRC. It's like, I don't know whether people get offended that they're voted out or what, but they decide to take their football and go home. But I've been asking questions about, you know, where's the list of community groups and contact phone numbers, people and phone numbers that I can call and ask to speak? Oh, we don't have that. I said, okay, well, can you give me the voting record of my opponent? Oh, we don't keep that here. I'm like, really? Well, you can get that yourself. Just, you know, go get it yourself. Like, I'm running a campaign here.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. It is, you would think that this stuff would be readily available. And
exactly.
You're like, wait a minute, I'm the candidate, and I'm, I can't, we need the cavalry. We need the cavalry to come to the aid of the candidates. And I tell you, Brian, I believe
we need a quartermaster corps.
We do. We absolutely. That's a great point. And I got to tell you, I was stunned at how little was available to me. And I thought to myself, you know, in the state run, I was running for the highest office on the ticket in Northern Virginia in this last election. And I'm looking around wondering where all the help was. There was no help. And I believe that when we put candidates forth, and you have people that put themselves out there, because folks, if you're listening to this podcast and you've never run for office, I can tell you it is just a beat down mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually. And what the people that run for office, and oftentimes, by the way, they're still working. They're not, this is not a full-time job for any of us. I believe that if you are a conservative, and I'm going to say conservative, not just Republican, but a conservative, we have an obligation to support, we have a moral and ethical obligation to support all of our candidates with our resources, whether it be money, your time, your support. Hey, you know, how about this? You know, even it's a little as, you know, calling up the next time you see your candidate, call them, or if you see them in a meeting, go up and just shake their hand and say, you know what, I appreciate what you're doing. Because we don't hear that. If you run for office, let me tell you, everybody comes out of the woodwork telling you what you're doing wrong. They complain. But you know what? Make it a point to go up to your candidates and shake their hand and say, you know what? I really appreciate everything that you're doing. And I thank you for doing this. You know what? That would go a long way to the candidates as well, because we get beaten up all day, every day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and you know, you mentioned something earlier, and I experienced it too. And, you know, I agree with you on the one hand about candidates going after one another and some of the throwing shade and the backbiting, that sort of thing. And fortunately, I've been around a long time. You know, this in the political sense, I used to be really good at regime change during the Cold War. So I've got kind of a thick skin. And what I see happening with these younger people now is they don't have these deep experiences in conflicts and world politics, that sort of thing. So when they start running, what I noticed was a reaction of insecurity. When the money started getting tight, when the people stopped showing up, they started to panic. And their panic just kind of transferred into the drowning man syndrome. In my life-saving courses, they told me never get within the grasp of a drowning man, because they will pull you under. And I think a lot of candidates tend to have that, you know, that tendency. They're so desperate that they will seek anything to push themselves up above the next person. And that's our fault, you know, because we don't support them, because we don't give them the strength, both in training, in morale, in experience, in preparing them properly. And one of the things that I think the reason for that, Mike, is that we have deferred to the consultants. And the first thing that when I started running, the first thing that happened was I got invited to this meeting under false pretenses to join my fellow candidates and get our platforms together and explore the commonalities and to see where we could be most effective. And it turned out to be an Amway meeting for consultants. And, you know, I looked at that and, I was like, get my nose out of joint a little bit. And I just said, thank you very much, but no, I'm not going to pay you your money. Then 2 weeks later, I get another, you know, the same people call me and said, listen, we're really sorry about that. That was kind of embarrassing. You know, come on back. Let's have another potluck dinner and do this again. And we'll definitely talk about our common effort. And sure enough, another shill came in and it was another Amway meeting for another consultant. So I kind of get a little, that's a little close to the bone for me, you know, and I wrote an email on that to the delegates, one of whom was a consultant who called me up and, or rather sent me an email explaining what he does for a living. And I said, you know what? I agree. You know, I'm a real estate agent now, and I have what the court calls superior knowledge. And I also have an extremely competitive marketplace. So people have to choose me based on what I deliver. And a lot of what I deliver can be taken away if I don't close the deal. So with the consultancy, yes, there's time there and a place for them to come into a campaign. But it's much further down the road than knowing a guy who knows a guy that can get you some palm cards for cheap, or knowing a guy who knows a guy that knows the governor. That, you know, that just comes, when it comes at the very beginning, they tend to push the FCRC staff and leadership out of the way so that the candidates go straight to them. And of course, then they sink the hook for their fees and their consultancy, and everything's on, you know, you can sign a note and, you know, you pay us after you lose and you have a constant reminder of what you should have done better. But that's my thoughts on that. I think I don't mind having consultants, but I want consultants who are really good at beating Democrats, not really good at shilling, you know, tchotchkes to me for a markup.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think a lot of what the consultants are offering up are really things that the FCRC should be doing anyway.
Absolutely. My point exactly.
But much of that is not stuff that you should be having to pay for as a candidate.
No.
And I can tell you this, I real bad taste in my mouth with the consultants. It's I get handed a lot of money and I get handed a phone list, and it's me making the phone calls, and there was very little return on that whatsoever. In fact, I remember one list I got, it had many people that weren't even living in the district in which I was running. And so I don't like that whole game. I'm not inherently against consultants, but it's a money-making business. Listen, I can tell you this, that I am surrounding myself with people that have an interest in me winning, and they want me to win. They want me to win. It is in their best interest that I win this office. I am not interested in working with someone that is looking for a paycheck, whether I win or lose, and could care less whether I win or lose.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, Brian, and maybe we'll kind of move in this direction too in this conversation, because those that know me know that I'm not running to be in office. I'm not running for office to be in power. I'm not running for office for any reason other than I love this country and I have served this country. I'm now in my fifth iteration of serving this nation, and I care deeply about it, and I'm very, very concerned with the direction that this country is going. And if you do not share that same sentiment, then you're not part of my campaign. You're not around me. And it seems to me that in the FCRC, we have a lot of people that need to be reminded of that. And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, my thoughts on that are that, you know, again, I'm gonna retreat into my geopolitical background. You know, when I was in my early 20s, I felt called to serve. And, you know, I got a lot of military training from the finest Marines that ever walked the planet, but I did not end up taking my oath because I ended up, you know, dressing on mufti and speaking in tongues behind the Iron Curtain in the Middle East and the Sahara Desert, places like that. And so, but their thoughts and that training always comes back to me, and there was a bigger picture. You know, there was a clear and present peril to our American way of life. And when I went over there, I saw that. And but I also went in harm's way because I knew that there was something worth sacrificing for, something bigger than myself, and it was this country. And it was the love of this country, the love of my family, and the love of my God that pushed me to play hide and seek with Vladimir Putin in Leningrad, young Lieutenant Putin. But when I look around us, My fear is that we have we're suffering from what I call affluenza. We think we have no enemies that we can't just, dismiss in a wave of a hand. And that's not true. We think we have no conflict, struggles, or peril to our republic that, won't be just sorted out by somebody else. And that's simply not true. And what I've noticed for the past 8 years is that President Trump said it best. They're really after us. He's just in the way. And in keeping with my thoughts of why I decided to get involved was I noticed that for the first 4 years, he fought like the devil and did a fantastic job getting a silent coup prosecuted against him every single day. And we sat out here and did nothing. We're like, oh yeah, now we got the guy in the White House, yippee-ki-yay, and let's have fun. And then comes 2020. And, however you come down on that side, whichever side of the fence, simply look at America since 2020. And, again, we have done nothing. I'm not going to point fingers at any individual person in any group. I'm talking universally. On the conservative side, I hold the grudge that we simply have not organized to address the clear and present danger to our grand republic. And so in the FCRC, they're simply the end of a long chain of people who have abdicated their responsibilities. They've gone to the don't have a cow man, somebody else handles that. Well, we've got to snap out of it, and we've got to snap out of it pretty quick, and in fact, this year. And we've got to put depth of bench into the Republican Party and the conservative movement writ large to where if we lose our leader, that we aren't completely disconsolate, disorganized, and chaotic, which was exactly what we were on January the 7th of 2020. And so that's what I see. And it goes back to the morale and the unit cohesion, the reason why I'm getting involved, because we have to build up a strong depth of bench with good candidates who will fight for us. I've been in a hot civil war, so I don't want any of your people misunderstanding what I'm saying to you. Anybody that says hot civil war is just flat crazy. Just walk away from them. But we are not using the power that this Constitution gives us to protect our rights, and that's what we have to do. We've got to pull up our socks. We've got to get organized. We've got to address all of these issues where we've been lacking, and do it in a positive way. And like I said, all hands on deck. I don't have time to complain about who drained the swamp. We're up to our ears in alligators, and it's time to start, not feeding them one of us at a time. It's time to just deal with the alligators.
Well, in Northern Virginia, let me just start with this. I read somewhere that during this last election, only about 35% of all registered Republicans, 35% of all registered Republicans showed up to vote. Now, of course, we want to bring Democrats over. Of course, we want moderates to come over. But our own people aren't even showing up. So how do we address that? Because it seems to me before we even work on any other group, we got to motivate our own base to show up. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do, actually. And it's, again, part of the reason why I got involved and one of the reasons why I want to compare our current globalist media to the Pravda-Tass that I saw behind the Iron Curtain. It's a twofold issue. One, that low turnout rate for Republicans is a direct function of the consultancy or the the hipster insider Republican fundi or operator that has, you know, it's like Bush saying in September at the World Trade Center, you know, y'all just keep going shopping, you know, we got this. And, you know, instead of having a rallying moment for the entire country, he squandered it. Y'all just stay home. And so Republicans have been kind of trained through a succession of poor leadership to wander down the PAC money routine. And everything's PAC money. Everything's taken care of by money. In Fairfax County, we have the opportunity, because we have a manageable number of people that we can actually go and talk to if we get our act together. And we can change that in that way. And then right behind that comes the kind of Republican laissez-faire saying, why should we bust our ass? Because when the Democrats are going to do such a poor job that everybody's going to vote for us in the next cycle anyway. So there's no sense in us going out and building the grassroots and knocking on doors, whatnot. These Democrats are going to ruin the nation so badly that people will come and vote for us as an alternative. And I got to tell you, Mike, that just drives me nuts when I hear people think like that and say those things, because look at the damage that gets done between that too cool for school attitude of the Republican insiders and the average working man. And we are in the throes of that right now. You look at what's happening around us to our fellow citizens. Crime is through the roof. You know, people are getting shot everywhere suddenly in Fairfax County. And prices, you know, people who were on the cusp of poverty, they've now been tipped over the edge. I mean, if you haven't gone to a grocery store lately and seen the carnage that is wrought on everybody's wallet, it's just unbelievable. And so we have that passing advantage that I think those people are going to come off the bench, if you will. But what the trick is going to be is to go out, get them off the bench, give them our message, give them our new organization, and keep them engaged. I did a email the other night on volunteerism. We have a passing advantage. As you may know, I did design what's called the district strategy last February, actually, where I said, you know, once I took a look at Fairfax County and I overlaid scale transparencies on the county map of our districts and our House districts, our state Senate districts, and our precincts and whatnot, what emerged out of that exercise is a simple Venn diagram where I saw the intersections of so many of the different campaigns where they had precincts in common. And I sent an email to my district chair and to the Fairfax County chair saying, guys, you know, we have an opportunity to reach everybody with a fraction of the man hours that everybody else is anticipating spending on this. And I heard so many volunteers were like, you know, burned out martyrs, you know, they're haggard and drawn and they just can't take anymore. And yeah, you ask them like, how was your day? And then you get a whole liturgy of what's wrong with things instead of having empowered, exciting people. And my hallmark and my summary line on that is, the most valuable asset in the FCRC is our volunteers' time. And it is incumbent on the leadership to trade equal value for that time. And so by that I mean that it's incumbent on me and everybody that will join me to lead the FCRC to, one, create our events so that we don't abuse the volunteers' time. That would be leave them standing around while we get our act together. or send them down a fool's errand that you know, no, either nobody shows up because we didn't do proper marketing, proper communications, or anything like that. But at the end of the day, it gets real simple. Design what success is and what you want to do. Reverse engineer from that so you know when you get there. And then plan how you're going to use this very valuable volunteer's time. And I think if we do that, and that all the volunteers suddenly walk away from an event excited, infused with solidarity for the conservative cause, and they walk away going, you know, I haven't had that spirit here since, you know, 2001. And that's what I think we need to do. You know, I think that's the way to deal with this low turnout. You know, we need to let people know there's something going on in the FCRC.
Yeah, and when we look at the FCRC meetings themselves, you know, again, as a candidate, I look at a lot of the, I see a lot of the people showing up at these meetings month after month after month, many of whom really are not actively supporting campaigns. They go to the meetings, but they're not supporting campaigns. How do we reach those folks?
Well, you know, those folks, where we can reach them one way, but in a more humorous bend, I have, I'm really working to get more younger Republicans into the fold. And I invited one of them to come along to one of our breakfasts. And it was very much like our meetings, right? And I'm watching this guy, and I can just see, you know, his shoulders begin to slump, his head begins to drop. And I thought, oh my God. So I lean over to him and I say, listen, man, I think we need to get out of here before a bingo game breaks out. And he just had everything you do to keep from laughing. And then we get out of there and we talked about, you know, what he saw and what doesn't work for him, and, you know, the gulf between when he was a young Republican in college and the university, and when he tried to get involved once he got out and ran into the 35% and the too cool for school chairmanship and leadership in the FCRC and the RPV and all that. They just got turned off because they couldn't plug in. They couldn't get an immediate sense of gratification for the volunteerism. And that shaped a lot of what I'm thinking, is that the older people, they have, it's more of a social function, you know, and that's another thing we've kind of got away from, being a very spontaneous, alive, diverse, kind of character-driven society, to where we're now in basically people showing up just to show up, functionaries. And they have their purpose. That's not a criticism, but you manage them differently than you manage other younger parts or other more active parts, if you will.
Yeah, it's going to be, and I like the fact that you're talking about getting the younger folks in, because I think that's something the Democrats do very, very well, is bring in the young people. We don't really seem to do a lot of that in the Republican Party. So I can tell you that if you get elected, I would really like to see that reaching out to the college age kids, high school kids even, doing functions with them and really talking to them about why conservatism is something that they should be interested in and how it's better for the country. Because I can tell you the Democrats own the young people, and we just have to do a better job with that.
Well, they pay them well. And that's something that we don't do. You know, we are volunteer. We are relying on the spirit of conservatism and sacrificing for your country. The Democrats pay them handsomely right out of the gate, like $16 to $20 an hour just to show up for collecting signatures, or to show up at rallies, or to show up at Antifa riots or whatever. They pay them. And they pay them under the table so that they don't lose their SNAP benefits or their welfare benefits. So, you know, we've done some research on that, and we know that we've proven that's true. But I would suggest to you that we're looking in the wrong place. my gut tells me from my business, my real estate building developing business, you know, the young workers, the Hispanics and the immigrant labor, they are all over the conservative philosophy. They want to keep what they make because they work hard for it. And they don't get a bunch of free ride, laissez-faire, la-la kind of stuff. They have to count pennies when they go home and you know, count heads and toes and mouths and feet and all that sort of thing. They are the natural target, or if you will, our natural audience for our philosophy. Because I tell them the same thing. I'm a one-trick pony. Dream big, work hard, and make a better future for your family. And they instinctively go, absolutely, that's why we came to America. And we are missing that boat because we want to pander to this idea of, well, let's make ourselves Democrat light, and maybe then they'll vote for us and get us in office. And of course, the Democrats are right behind us with their, you know, with the donkey ear sign up behind our head, you know, because they've been there before. And they laugh us out of the room because it looks like we're weak and pathetic, and we actually are, when we pander for, you know, votes.
That's absolutely correct. And I'll tell you something, that if you look at the Republican candidates that have done very well over the last few years, they are not Republican light at all. They are, right. Look at Donald Trump, look at Ron DeSantis, yep. Look at Jim Jordan, look at other, you could go down through a whole laundry list of people, Rick Scott. These are not people that are, you know, Republican light or almost Democrat, you know, just another version of a Democrat. These are people that hold up conservative values. They're loud and they are proud and they do not back down. And those,
no,
so
excuses.
This notion that you have to always go to the center to win elections, there's actually not a lot of evidence of that. There's not.
Well, especially in light of some of the all the effort that's been paid or spent on the kind of get out the vote data purchases and data manipulations. And, you know, I got a couple of people's nose out of joint at a breakfast meeting the other day when I, after listening to 2 hours of, you know, statistics and, you know, on and on and on, I finally had enough. I get up and when it's my turn to speak, I said, excuse me. How many people here are tired of hearing how many voters dance on the head of a pin? And the crowd just went nuts. You know, it's here. It's our homes. Just get out and walk next door and talk to the guy. You know, walk across the street. You can probably, in the course of your day, meet 25 people. And just you don't have to proselytize. You can just say, hey, well, how about this, you know, this inflation business, huh? How about this, you know, this war thing, this World War III that these yahoos are trying to start so badly? You know, there's any one of a thousand things that we can talk and let people know that we're here. And that's one of the reasons why I want to get the depth of bench.
Yeah.
Because I've talked to a number of people lately who have been kind of abused by very authoritarian, very answer to nobody bureaucrats in the Fairfax County government. Mm-hmm. These people think that they're not civil servants. It's the civil that serves them. And, you know, they're getting away with it when we turn over a 9-to-1 board of supervisors, you know, and they stack the deck with their employees so their employees know, and they're given the green light. You don't, you know, no, you don't have to, you know, respond to a citizen complaint. You know, just tell them to refer to them online. But, you know, we're raising your taxes. Of course, last year they said, well, we're not raising your taxes. And then the first thing they do when they get a 9-to-1 majority, a supermajority, is they raise the taxes, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, and then it just goes on and on and on. They're getting away with, you know. Now we're this close to having this permanent assisted living wage off of your tax dollars. This isn't a federal government program. This is a Fairfax County program, where we are guaranteeing assisted wage to larger and larger populations in Fairfax County. No questions asked. You don't have to qualify for this. All you have to do is be someplace where we need votes, and we'll start giving you $1,000, $1,500 a month. No questions asked. You don't have to tell us how you're spending it. Just vote for us.
Wow. Man, so many different issues to tackle. So tell us a little bit about this weekend coming up. And then before we close out, let everybody know how they can get hold of you, your social media sites, how they can learn as much as they can about you, because it's a big weekend for you.
It is a very big weekend, and I am I'm kind of a mix of contact information. I can be reached at my email address that I'm using is Timberlane Captain, because I'm still a precinct captain in the Timberlane District. So TimberlaneCaptain@gmail.com. I've left my campaign site up of BrianMurphyForSupervisor.com. And I, let's see, Facebook has Brian Murphy for Supervisor, and YouTube has the Brian Murphy for Supervisor channel. And this weekend is, it's the go big or go home weekend. We're having our convention on Saturday morning between the hours of 8 and 12. They will lock the doors at 9, so we're all in for the convention, kind of good old-fashioned political deal. And we will I will have 8 minutes to speak, as will my competitors, and we will emerge at the end of that with a new chairman of the FCRC. So everybody is welcome to attend, and stay tuned for the news of me being the next chairman of the FCRC.
That's exciting. It really is. And so the you said 8 to 12 for the convention. The doors are locked at 9, so nobody can come in after 9 a.m. Is that correct?
Nobody, no admission after 9.
Wow. Okay.
You have to be in the convention. It's good old fashioned, political conventions. it's like, I think once upon a time they used to lock the doors and put guards outside, but now it's just you don't want people coming in late going, for whatever reason, either they were putting the fix in someplace else or whatever. So they just want everybody's attention to be focused on, gathering, caucusing, and talking about, meeting the candidates, because we'll all be there, crushing the flesh, gripping and grinning, and getting our message out. And then we'll, of course, have our formal 8 minutes apiece, where we will get to speak to 592 delegates and whoever else shows up to hear us talk.
Now, how is this done? Is this a ballot? Do people fill out a ballot? Yes. And put it in a hat, or how is this done?
Every delegate will be given a ballot. And at a certain time, I guess after we've finished our speeches, and that will probably occur maybe about 10 o'clock, because they're going to need, at 692, they're going to have to organize, the process of casting ballots. And I just put in my two observers today. Each candidate has two observers to monitor the counting. And we have FCRC staff who have volunteered to be at the table to receive the ballots. And then they will be, a secret ballot and collected. And then they'll be tabulated. So I gather the 11 to 12 hour will be more like just milling around, shooting the breeze and getting to know folks you haven't met in a long time, or saying hi to people you haven't seen in a long time. And then, they'll have the big announcement, and it's either going to be, celebrating Saturday night, or getting ready to go to work for the other guy.
Yeah, and I really do hope that no matter what happens, that and I think you kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, when people leave or get voted out, or just have issues within the party, they leave. And we can't have that. I think we all, listen, you're either in for this cause or you're not. And we have to support, you know, whoever wins it at any juncture. We have to support all of our candidates, folks. That's what we have to do. In fact, that's one of the things that was said earlier this year after this last election. One of the leaders of the FCRC, as a matter of fact, mentioned that it's an interesting notion. You see people run for office and, you know, they're all gung-ho while they're running for office. Then when they lose office, they stick around for a month or two and then you never see them again. In fact, I've noticed that. If you look at candidates that have even been in office as Republicans in Northern Virginia, they're not found. And those are people that would be nice to tap into when you're running for an office. If you could tap into the knowledge and the experience of some of these people, but they just disappear. And we can't have that. Folks, you're either in this conservative cause or you're not. So, you know, I think we all have to do a soul search as to why we're doing this in the first place and stick with it.
Well, I think that we need to, again, build the depth of the bench. We need to rediscover our message of what we're all about. I mean, you know, we're the stewards of the message, the miracle that occurred on July 4th of 1776. And it has drawn people from the moment the ink wasn't dry on that document that we changed the world, fundamentally changed the world. And it has survived for 250 years. It continues to inspire people all over the world. We just have got to remember that it's a living message that we're giving. And that it resonates in everybody, everywhere. And I think that when we have people, there's kind of two things running on the idea that people leave and never come back. Losing a campaign has devastating impact on you, both financially, personally, and emotionally. And that's one of the things that I have noticed. And that's one of the reasons why I'm running, and I want to change that. I want to change it so that if we have good candidates, we stand them up and we support them, then they'll stick around. They won't be completely devastated. And I think the devastation comes both, again, personally and financially. It's hard to look people in the eye when you've just got skunked by the opposition. But anyway, that's my two cents worth, Mike. Yeah. And I think you and I are completely simpatico on the necessity to restoke the fire in the belly.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, where is this convention at on Saturday? I don't know if we mentioned that.
Braddock High School.
Lake Braddock High School is starting at 8 o'clock.
9200 Burke Lake Road, and you have to go into door number 14. It's a one entrance, one out, just like a polling place. And it starts, we'll be there early because we have to set up the volunteers to handle the registration and all that. Mm-hmm. So we'll be there about 7. The convention formally starts at 8, where we'll open the doors and let the crowd in. And then we'll verify all the IDs and everything like that. And then manage it all the way through to 12 o'clock.
Sounds good. Well, Brian Murphy, thank you so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Mike, what a pleasure.
I enjoyed talking with you. And you know what? Good luck on Saturday. I will be there. I will be there as well.
Good.
And I'll see you there. Folks, get out there. Lake Braddock High School. And this Saturday, 8 to 12, check out Brian's socials. And, you know, guys, get involved. This is a big election coming up. So Absolutely. You all, yeah, thank you again. And you guys take care of yourselves. And Brian, good luck to you. I will see you Saturday. And you guys.
Looking forward to it, Mike.
Absolutely. And thanks again for joining us here on the Mike Van Meter Show. God bless Mike. America. We can do this, guys. Get involved.
We can.
All right. Take care.
Bye. Bye.